Welcome to today's edition of the Exploring Mining Podcast, featuring stock news from TSX, TSXV, CSE, ASX, NASDAQ, and New York Stock Exchange mining companies, plus interviews with CEOs and leading experts.
Hey everyone, and thanks for joining us again on the Exploring Mining Podcast. Today's interview is with Anil Warich, Executive Vice President and Director of Step Gold. Step Gold is Mongolia's premier precious metals producer and now soon to be the leading gold producer in Mongolia. Anil speaks to us about the background of starting Step Gold and mining in Mongolia. As a producing gold mine in Mongolia that is currently trading under a dollar, this story is well worth a listen for gold investors. Cost efficiency and renewable energy initiatives are two of the standouts we talk about, as well as production results from 2023, Step's recent acquisition making them the largest producer of gold in Mongolia, and what to look out for next in 2024 for gold prices and juniors. Step Gold trades on the TSX under the symbol STGO. To learn more about Step Gold, you can go to their website at www.steppegold.com. This podcast may contain forward-looking statements. Investors are reminded to do their own due diligence and read all disclaimers and disclosures. I hope you all enjoy the show.
Welcome to the show, Anil. Always feels great to have a new company on our show. For listeners that are new to the Step Gold story, can you give us a quick history of the company and how you got involved?
Yeah, sure. So Step Gold, today, actually, we're a gold and silver producer. We've been in production from our phase one operation, which is an oxide mine, since April 2020. And we're now expanding over the next 18 months into a larger sulfide mine, which will bring our production from approximately 30,000 ounces per annum today to over 100,000 ounces. And that's fully funded. We've raised $150 million U.S. of project financing, all debt, to fully fund that expansion, which will come online in Q2 of 2026. And we'll produce at that run rate of approximately 103,000 ounces per annum at about $950 all-in cost. So we're a producer generating a little bit of cash flow today and then going into a much larger project that's fully funded, fully licensed and permitted, and construction's already started. In all that, we've also just recently announced an acquisition, also in Mongolia, where we are producing and where our home base is, of another mine called Buru. And that operation actually produces already about 60,000 ounces per annum and will for the next 6 to 7 years at approximately $1,000 all in cost. So very quickly this year, starting Q3, we jump up from a 30,000 ounce producer, not too sexy, I guess, but still real, to about 90,000 ounces of production at $1,000 all in starting Q3 of this year, which becomes very relevant and scalable in this market. No different than, I guess, the 150,000 ounce producer that produces at $1,400 all in. So scale is now immediate instead of waiting 2 years. And then we jump up to about 160,000 ounces of production starting Q2 of 2026.
I wanted to talk about Mongolia. I've heard amazing things about the people and the geology there. Can you tell us why you picked Mongolia and just give us some of the information about jurisdiction? I know it's quite a friendly mining area.
Yeah, for sure. So actually, one of the questions you asked previously, you know, how I got involved and since when? I've been involved since the end of 2016 when we started this company as a private company with no assets and no money. So I'm a co-founder of the company. I'm on the board. So I've been involved with raising all the money and negotiating the acquisitions and building out the larger team that's now about 350 employees, 99% Mongolian. And how we got involved in Mongolia is because of my business partner, Matt Wood, who's an exploration geologist, was a former executive chairman of Step Gold until last summer. Our other partner, Bata Tumer Osher, who's now the chairman and CEO, who's a Mongolian national. Bata and Matt have worked together since 2009 in Mongolia when Matt went there looking for precious metals, but it just happened that coal was hot back then. So in 2010, he listed a coal company called Hunu Coal. That was a $20 million IPO on the ASX. And in 2011, at the end of 2011, that was sold for $500 million cash to a Thai energy company called Bamboo. So that was our first entry and success, I guess, as a team, why we know how to navigate the country. And have now obviously proven that out with Step Gold, where we've already built the mine and building our second and I guess buying the third. Certainly we know the jurisdiction. And more importantly, just like Hunu Coal was built, you know, Matt was one of only three expats out of probably 300 employees at the time when he sold it. Today, Step Gold is really a Mongolian company listed on the TSX. Our chairman and CEO is Mongolian, our president's Mongolian, half our board are Mongolian, and 99% of our workforce in country are local. And that's how you should do business in any jurisdiction, not just Mongolia. It not only, you know, buys you that insurance policy and you get to buy in locally, socially, and, you know, from the government as well, but you can also operate when there's times of pandemics and whatnot. We saw in 2020 when we wanted to start production for the first time ever. So we were able to bring production online with a 100% local team. So that's the advantage of also being local. Mongolia as a jurisdiction is a resource-rich country. What we would say is one of the last frontiers. It's resource-rich, underexplored, and already home to a world-class discovery and mine called Oyu Tolgoi that Rio Tinto now operates, and it was discovered by Robert Freeland in the 2000s. That really put them on the map. So you have a country that's resource-rich, underexplored. There's probably more Oyu Tolgois to be discovered, a lot more precious metal deposits of 3-5 million plus ounces as well. You have a stable government, pro-mining, pro-foreign investment, you know, parliamentary elections every 4 years. So it's you know, what we call the best functional democracy in the former Soviet countries and satellite countries like Mongolia is. So it really is a very interesting place today where, you know, you don't see any violence or terrorism that you may see in some other jurisdictions. You've had a stable government that hasn't changed royalty or tax regimes. Doesn't want to be owners of the assets, are happy to be passive investors and clip their royalties and taxes, just like we have today with 100% ownership of our projects, and a lot of room to grow. And so that's the advantage that we have as a company. And we've seen other I guess validation of Mongolia with Rio Tinto doubling down in country, consolidating the ownership of Oyu Tolgoi and buying out Turquoise Hill. You know, that's another $8-9 billion commitment to the country. So that's strong validation. The French government, Macron was just there in the summer, and they signed a $2 billion uranium agreement. The Indians are there, the Japanese, the Koreans, the Germans, and obviously the Canadians. So very destination that you can actually do things properly to Western standards, and probably quicker than you can in a lot of our Western jurisdictions today.
Well, you just sold me on Mongolia. I imagine most investors would be very pro after that. Let's talk about your flagship property, ATO Gold Mine. Last year, Q3, you had, if I have the number correct, your gold production was 23% higher than expected. Can you give us kind of a quick overview about that property?
Yeah, so the ATO property is our flagship asset today. It's a greenfield asset that we purchased from Centerra Gold for $20 million U.S. cash. So they retained no ownership back in 2017. So we bought it as a private company backed by Elliott Group out of New York and Triple Flag Mining Finance. So some really blue chip investors backed us early on before we went public in 2018. It was about 1.2 million ounces of resources when we purchased it from Centerra Gold, inclusive of 210,000 ounces of reserves. You know, they spent about $30 million U.S. on the project, drilled 67,000 meters, 20,000 meters of trenching. More importantly, they got it fully licensed and permitted for the heap leach that we built and brought online in 2020, but also for our expansion. So for phase one and two, we already bought a permitted project, but we took a phased approach and separated and lowered the risk profile of the company by starting with a low capex heap leach project that generates cash flow, helps build our asset base for the sulfides to then bring online at a later time, which we are now doing today. So today, ATO, with limited drilling, but just a new geological reinterpretation that Matt put together with our team, we did some holes, drilled some more holes, extended the deposits, doubled the size of one, and we're only down to 350, 400 meters today. So they're still growing, but we obviously have enough ounces to bring our expansion online. That's over 10 years of mine life, 12 years today, at over 100,000 ounces, which we can then fund or self-fund further growth below these deposits or extensions below deposits, and of course across the property. So today we're sitting at 1.7 million ounces of gold equivalent reserves. So, you know, pretty significant increase over the last couple of years and still growing. So that's the project that, you know, continues to give. You know, we do think it could grow to 3 to 5 million ounces over time, but now it's over 2 and we have enough to bring a 100,000 ounces of production at over 12 years of mine life online now and continue to grow it. So very exciting project that we bought for $20 million U.S. and have built it in a phased approach to help lower the risk profile of the company and the asset.
And you also just recently announced very exciting news of your acquisition for Puro. Can you talk to us about that, which makes you, I guess, the largest gold producer in Mongolia?
Yes. Yeah. No, very exciting. Listen, in an ideal world, I wish our stock price was higher, but sometimes you just can't wait. it's just, you know, this is the world we're living in, right? And we as a management team, by the way, you know, own 20% of the company and never sold a share, and we've been public for just under 60 years. So we feel the pain with our investors, and we try to mitigate dilution as much as possible because we're on the same boat. So that's a very important alignment, I guess, with our investors. So this Puro transaction, requiring a producing mine that's been in production for the last 3 years. It was actually a former Centerra asset as well, and it was purchased by a separate private group that brought it back online. At its peak, when Centerra was running it, it was producing over 200,000 ounces between the heap leach and the CIL plant. We are buying a heap leach, a CIL plant, and a fleet. And it's been in production for 3 years, and we see at least today, based on the technical work that we reviewed, at least about 6 to 7 years of mine life remaining at that run rate, with potential to extend it. So very exciting, because you're buying this asset at approximately 2x free cash flow. You know, or 1x revenue, I guess. So that's pretty significant, accretive deal. You know, again, it's diluted because our share price, it's more diluted because our share price isn't higher and not where it should be or where it's been in the past. But at the same time, it changes our company today and adds that scale and relevance for investors in the market now, instead of waiting 2 years for our expansion to come online. So important from that point of view, for the scale and the free cash flow that it's going to bring to our company, about $40 million US a year of additional free cash flow starting Q3 of this year on a yearly basis. So that's huge, I would say. It consolidates the, you know, further assets in Mongolia where our team is focused. So it shows our focus and we're becoming the premier platform for precious metals in country. And, you know, there's obviously the industrial logic when you add two producing centers to one executive and one corporate team, right? So there'll be natural synergies just from the integration of that operation. And then, of course, you know, it creates leverage. You know, we have two producing mines instead of just one. So the next 2 years, we have cash flow that could be used to obviously, you know, de-risk the company if things take longer to bring our phase two online in ATO. Maybe the interest rates could go down over the next 12, 18 months, that we can refinance our debt package on more favorable terms, given we now have two producing assets. We'll have more cash on the balance sheet. And then, of course, ultimately, we'll have more excess cash flow that, you know, something we can't do today, which we'd love to, given how low our valuation is, and, I mean, everyone's are, of course, is, you know, be able to either buy back shares or return capital. So we could probably expedite those opportunities to close the valuation gap if the market doesn't recover sooner than later, if we don't get that recovery, so forget the re-rate that you know that should happen. We need to recover first and then get the re-rate. And I think this can help expedite all that and certainly put the company in a much better, stronger position coming into what I hope and believe will be a better market later this year. And maybe if it takes longer, we're still well positioned.
Definitely, I think it's a standout that you're a producing gold mine under a dollar. I mean, that's something I would attention to if I was an investor. Two of the other things that really stand out to me for your company is your cost efficiency and then your renewable energy initiative. Can you just quickly talk about those two subjects for investors?
Yeah, so from the cost perspective, we're currently producing, I guess, from our oxide mine, which is obviously a lower run rate, about $800, $900 all-in cost. So it's, you know, it's made money since day one. You know, not a lot, but all that's being reinvested into a little bit more exploration, sustaining CapEx, and more importantly, servicing the debt that we're drawing down on while we're constructing our phase two. So that's pretty significant on the cost side. So we are on the Mongolian steppe. If you look at our videos and photos, there's nobody around. It's like being in the plains here in mid Canada here or towards the west of Canada. You get lots of sun and you get lots of wind. And so we did that power study as part of our revised feasibility study back in 2021 with the opportunity to try to take advantage of the renewable component. It's something that, you know, will take a little bit more time, but there is a path that we could become 100% renewable. So for now, we're diesel gen sets on the phase one operation. We're moving to grid power over the next couple of years for the phase two operation. And during that time, it looks like that we have the right partner I don't think we've disclosed it, that could finance and build a renewable power solution that allows us to be fully renewable on site and also actually provide power locally. So that could be a huge win, certainly for the company. The opportunity exists. You can store energy now with the wind and solar. So before, we were always worried about not being the most reliable source solely and toggle between. So we'll probably still have the toggle option between grid power and renewable just as a safeguard. But certainly that path to renewable is a nice way to button all this up.
Just quickly mentioned about your financing that you had, the $150 million. Can you just talk to investors about that briefly, and then your phase two, how that is looking for this year?
So the $150 million U.S. We raised was announced last July. We've actually started drawing down on that facility as of November of last year, about $9.6 million, and I think you'll see another draw probably in the next 60 days or so for a much chunkier amount, which really shows everyone that capital is available to us and that phase two is proceeding. But more importantly, this is a one-and-done solution in Mongolia. So the largest commercial bank, TDB Bank, Trade and Development Bank in Mongolia, provided us this whole project financing. We did go around the world, talk to all the commercial banks, all the private equity mining groups, and this was the most equity-friendly deal. We were able to raise $150 million of project financing without having to raise the equity component, which is, very normal in most circumstances, and usually about 30% of that CapEx and of that raise. So had we had to raise 30% of $150 million at that time, that would be an almost 50% dilution. We were able to just delay that or to avoid that. I mean, that's massive, huge, huge upside for ourselves and equity holders. So it was an equity-friendly deal, three tranches of $50 million U.S. We're drawing on the first draw now, as I mentioned, at 13.4% interest rate. The second draw of $50 million when we start drawing will be 12%. These are all fixed numbers. And the third is a gold-linked note that, we have the option to draw or not. And with this new cash flow requiring from an operating mine, who knows if the gold price moves in the next year or two that, generates more cash flow across our operations, we may not even need to use it, or we can pay back even further. Equity-friendly deal. Interest-only payments on this package until 6 months post-commissioning of our phase two. So now we have flexibility again. A lot of packages, you're paying back principal sooner, which means that you don't have a working capital cushion to, handle any startup potential issues, which, could happen in the first one or two quarters. And now we can focus on our operations those first 6 months to generate a lot of cash flow than focusing on paying back. So that's a huge deal as well. So, shows you the support we get in country, and certainly one of the best packages you can put together that I've seen, basically a landmark project financing. So this shows you how our team is dynamic and always working hard to try to mitigate dilution and also focus on operations than a payback.
Oh, it's a fantastic milestone to achieve, especially in markets that were last year. You briefly just touched on your management team, and you talked a little bit about that in the beginning, but can you just walk us through a little more in track record and history and some of your past success?
Yeah, sure. So Matt Wood, as I mentioned, who's a co-founder and was a founding executive chairman of Step Gold, exploration geologist, very smart one, and quickly identified that this asset would grow, misunderstood, and obviously non-core for Centerra. He's had success, obviously, in Mongolia, as I mentioned earlier, with Hunu Coal, being a founder and executive chairman of that company and being sold for $500 million cash. He's built companies around the world, including a gold company in Armenia that was sold in 2007 for $130 million. He's done work in West Africa. In Brazil, he was the founding executive chairman and co-founder of Avanco Resources, which was a copper producer, sold in 2018 to Oz Minerals, which is now part of BHP. So, he's the main guy of our team that's technical and has that those exits and wins and building a company. Bata Tumor-Osher, who's worked with him since 2009, who's now our chairman and CEO, is a Mongolian national and has worked on numerous mining and oil and gas companies in Mongolia. Really has a good lay of the land and obviously very strong relationships with all levels of government and locally, and knows how to handle, really is the boots on the ground that gets stuff done and runs the show. So it's not just a face sometimes, as people, you know, call these companies in other jurisdictions. So, and then myself, I'm a former banker. I used to work at the Dundee Group of Companies, both at Goodman & Company and then at Dundee Capital Markets as an investment banker as my last role there. And then in 2016, I got the opportunity when I was advising Matt on another project in Brazil as a banker to join forces and start this journey. Very exciting one and it's been amazing on that basis. And then our CFO, Jeremy Self, he's a former head of Deloitte's global mining practice. He actually set up, I believe, Deloitte's operations in Mongolia like 13, 14 years ago, worked out of Asia for 4 years. So he's got that global experience and, of course, in Mongolia. And then on our board, we have a gentleman like Patrick Michaels out of Zurich. Him and his father used to run a precious metals fund, and then they run a multifamily office, basically, and, you know, one of our first investors as well. So that's good distribution there. We also have Steve Haggerty, who used to be a former Bear of Gold heap leach expert, world-renowned cold weather heap leach expert. So certainly we have someone else technical that adds value to our team and our board. It's great. And then the list goes on of the five other board members. If you want me to get into, I can. But obviously a bunch of local members that are very strong. Former environmental minister in Mongolia, who's also on the UN climate change panel. We have a geologist who's also a teacher at the Mongolian Institute. So we've got a good diverse board with varied experience that adds a lot of value.
Can you talk to us as the acquisition moves ahead, what's going to be your stock structure, and just kind of give investors a little bit of what's going on for this year?
Sure. So once we close the transaction, and I call it end of Q2, so end of June this year, we'll have about 250 million shares outstanding. At that point, almost 5 million ounces on the balance sheet, two producing assets, and a third obviously coming online in 2026 that's fully funded. So cash flow profile for the company on 250 million shares will be about 50-ish U.S. at the current gold price for the next, call it, 2 years, and then we'll jump up to probably 80, 90 million U.S. free cash flow, from these operations. And our plan is obviously to have more mines in Mongolia. We're going to advance our exploration projects, maybe acquire some more development and whatnot. A fairly tight structure, I would say, as a producer, even today with 104.5 before the acquisition, pretty lean, I would say. So in our market cap today before the acquisition is barely scratching 65 Canadian, embarrassingly, but again, that's just the market, and we clean up very well when people care. And so cap structure will be pretty tight at that point. I think there will be no further large equity raises. However, we are, and we've already announced this, that we do plan, and we've already been working on it for actually a couple of years now, is a dual listing in Hong Kong. And the reason is we are an Asian producer, so we are well understood. Today on the TSX, which we obviously will remain on the main board of the TSX, we're one of hundreds of producers and one of thousands of mining companies. So in Hong Kong, as an Asian producer today, we'll be one of seven listed companies. Four of them or so are producers with market caps of 2.3 billion to 50 billion. So even at 250 million shares, and I'm just going to use a number here, Canadian, at $2 a share, that's 500 Canadian and 400 US. Will be dirt cheap compared to other comps. Obviously, that's a market cap comparison, but a lot of room to grow, more liquidity, well understood. I think that'll be another catalyst for the company. And so that's what our cap structure will kind of be around, I would say, and maintain around that. And we'll have a lot of cash in the future to solve things. If the market's still weak, then we can buy back shares. Or in a few years, let's call it, at least 2-3 years, we can be a dividend payer, or we can do both. So a lot of flexibility, a lot of opportunity to create liquidity events for ourselves and investors that doesn't rely on just a trade sale.
It's a very exciting story. Everything I hear, I love about your company. I know we don't have a magic eight ball today, but it's a good day for gold. We're coming up to PDAC. What is your speculation for the gold market? What do you think we're going to see for March? And do you think that this will translate, or hope it'll translate, into some of the junior space?
It always does eventually, but unfortunately, it always starts at the top. At the top, you have the Newmonts and the Agnicos, and I think Newmont today is probably still hovering around, well, $43 today, okay? So they're doing a bit better. They were at $40 a couple days ago. You know, last time gold was at this price and holding up, they were over 100, you know, close to $100. This is the biggest gold company in the world, by the way, right? So it always starts at the top, given that they have more cash flow, longer life mines, a bigger asset base. But it does trickle down, and I always use the example of 2020. Every asset class, including gold, and all the equities sold off at the beginning, the first quarter. And then as gold came and recovered first, then the equities did very quickly. We were a 90 cent stock when we started production in 2020, and we were $3. And we had a market cap that was almost four times our current market cap back then in August 2020, with only producing for 3 months ever, only having just over 1 million ounces on our balance sheet. And today we have more than that. We have eight times more reserves. We've produced successfully for producing over 100,000 ounces. We've de-risked our expansion and raised that money. So we have ourselves, being selfish here, but we ourselves have opportunity to certainly re-rate and recover at multiples of where we're trading today without having to raise money to get there. And I think it's going to trickle down the juniors, producers. So it's going to go with the majors, mid-tiers, juniors. And when it happens quickly, and it happens, and it's big, right? And I think as you see one or two interest rate cuts, whenever that happens, I'm just being conservative second half of this year. You're going to see more money that's sitting on the sidelines collecting coupons because there's no urgency to jump in the market, and all of a sudden, producers like us, people see the screens and the profitability and the multiples. You're going to see some of these guys trade at, you know, majors go up 2 to 3X, majors, right? The guys are 30, 40, $50 billion companies go up 2 to 3X, and then you see some of the mid-tiers and juniors go up anywhere from 3 to 10X. That's how I see it playing out, and then you're going to see it trickle down to expiration where people start funding them again.
I love that answer. I hope you're right. Anil, this has been fantastic. Can you give investors where they can reach out to you? I know you're going to be at PDAC. Where are there any other conferences that you're coming up to or anything else that they can follow you?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, we're very active on social media, on our distribution list. Go to our website at www.steppegold.com. You can certainly sign up there. Our contacts are there, so any investor can reach out to me directly, and I'm happy to have a call. We will be at PDAC. We have events starting Sunday, including a Mongolia Day event on Sunday with multiple companies and in the ministry will present, and then events after. So we're here at PDAC for the next week. I can't think offhand when our next conference after that is. We've been very selective as well, given the market. There's no point going to everything, so we didn't participate in anything in the last kind of month or so. Early in the year, we were in Saudi at the Future Minerals Forum, but we'll find the next venue, certainly, but we are very active online through our distribution list and very accessible. So any investor who listens to this and wants to get a hold of me or anyone else in the company, please reach out. All contacts are there, and we're happy to arrange a call. And obviously, I don't have to say we're cheap. Everyone is. But certainly those who have production growth and cash flow growth and still all the exploration sizzle and upside that Anexplorico have, we kind of have a full package here with a lot of room to grow. And a majority of our investors, including Eric Sprott and Fidelity and ourselves and Elliot, have all come in at higher prices and are all very supportive, as you can see. So great opportunity for new investors to get in. Unfortunately, cheaper than some of the most sophisticated investors in the world. How long that'll last, I can't say, but again, that is the opportunity.
Oh, it's great. I love it. I'm sold on the deal, so.
So am I.
Well, thank you so much, Anil. This was great.
Well, that does it for today's Exploring Mining podcast. If you'd like to be a guest or sponsor for this podcast, please contact investorideas.com. Investorideas.com reminds all listeners to read our disclaimers and disclosures on the investorideas.com website. All investment involves risk, and this podcast is not meant to be an endorsement to buy or sell securities or products. To hear more podcasts, you can go to investorideas.com/audio. And a reminder, you can also hear our podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play Music, iHeart.com, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spreaker, and SoundCloud.